grace and faith were used on us, not by it.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, January 25, 2019, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studio right here in Good News Alley, Midtown, USA, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. But right now, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Good evening, Don.
Good evening. It's seems to be getting lighter in the evenings now. I'm not sure if that's because of what.
Your weekend and week has gone how?
My weekend? You want to talk about? I got a foundation garment for my weekend.
Oh, well, let's move on quickly. Well, it has been a good week here at the household in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. My sister is she's just so happy. It's just, day before yesterday, I came to tears seeing her so joyful, so peaceful, so happy, her commenting about how wonderful it is around the house and how, just how joyful that she is. I have another sister that is staying here with us at the time, and it's just amazing. I'm telling you, I not only doing what I came here to do, but I'm very happy doing what I came here to do. It's just absolutely joyful to me, and I couldn't imagine leaving the situation where I was, and this is a testament, I think, to the grace of God, to the gospel, that I left my situation, which I had very deliberately adapted to, and that was living alone and being alone, except for interruptions from the occasional person staying with me for a short period of time. So I've become very accustomed, and even when I had people staying with me, I kind of was like, yeah, I want my space back, you know, and even though I enjoyed the time.
Is that how you felt after I visited you?
Oh, no, it was like, oh, thank God, and Greyhound, he's gone. No, your visit wasn't nearly as long as these others, so we had a good time on our visit, and it was fun. So, but transitioning into this and finding that very same peace. See, I thought I was at peace because I was alone, because and because and because. And coming here to such a unusual situation, a really highly stressed situation, potentially, it's taken weeks and weeks and weeks to get an equilibrium, to get organization and things happening to disrupt the organization that you work 5 weeks to do. And then somebody comes along, drops a bomb on that, you know, and then you're back at square one. And but to find that very same place of peace in the middle of this situation that I had with nobody around, I can tell you the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. because I'm experiencing the very same levels of joy and peace here in this situation that I have decided to be in. And I want to point that out, folks. That's why it's important to live from your heart. I decided to come here. I didn't feel put upon. I didn't feel guilty. I didn't come because if I don't go, my sister's going to go into nursing care. I did not make a decision based on any of those things. Even though they were used as leverage to get me to make that decision, I let people know I will not make a decision based on these things. It'll be what my heart says to do and or not do. And because I took responsibility for my decision, then the difficulties that arose, there was grace there to handle these things. And I'm learning a lot. So the dimensions of experiencing grace have grown for me being here.
And it was such a gentle easing in for you. I mean, it was family. It was somebody you knew, and it was some place you knew.
Mm-hmm.
So very gentle. I hope we all have it that gentle.
Well, in some cases, it was family that made it difficult. It certainly wasn't my sister, though. And I assure you that family member is not listening to this program, so I'm not having any not any concerns that might happen. It is I truly am grateful to be here. Seeing my sister happy, like I said, it literally brought me to tears the other day. She's just almost giddy with the feelings of love and being appreciated. And I thank her every day for taking care of me and her baby brother, and tell her how generous and kind she is for doing what she's doing. And she's just elated. She's just almost euphoric. So.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Now, do you want to talk about my weekend?
Well, compared to that, what are you going to say? I don't want to hear about your undergarments, no. You have another story you'd like to share?
Yeah, well, what's the point? Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm
talking
about
getting shot down right in midair. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it didn't take you but a second to do that, too.
I mean, right in the process of changing your underwear, you got shot down.
Oh, what's the difference between a person in a nursing home and a person not in a nursing home?
I don't know, but I'm afraid we're going to find out.
Depends.
Oh, yes. A very good answer, actually, so...
See, you just, man, I'm going to bring back the rifle because that really.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, what are we doing this week, Mr. Michael?
We're continuing in Hebrews. We have ventured into territory that has been so misconstrued by Christianity and virtually every branch and breed of Christianity, regardless of how many there are or are not. Catholic, Protestant, Pentecostal, non-Pentecostal, dip, dunk, or dose, they all got it wrong. And what we're doing is allowing Hebrews to do this for itself. Now, we're dealing with this term today, that we ran into after we got through down through at least verse 7. We're going to back up just a little bit. I think if we go to what, verse 4 and start from there.
That far, okay.
And just read through that so that we can take a running hit at the rest of these verses here. And by the way, let me interrupt you. I've gotten text. I've gotten so much comment from people that I don't normally hear from on a regular basis, just absolutely enthralled with what they're hearing. And they're so appreciative. And I think none of us felt we'd get much more out of Hebrews, but here we are in a whole new world with this letter.
Well, let me just chime in there for a minute. We had one of our people on the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution Facebook group. And by the way, if you want to bring yourself a little closer to the Gospel Revolution, that's a good place to start. We also have a private group, but Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution is a Facebook group. Failing that, you can always go to www.gospelrevolution.com on the interwebby thing, and you can see more of us there. But one of our wonderful people said something like, wow, these podcasts are getting better and better all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what a lovely thing to hear. Now, while we're on this topic, it is important for us to know how many people are hearing us. We're just vain. We're just vain. Put it down to animal vanity. But it would be nice if you could just email me, Beris Bart, that's Bravo, Echo, Romeo, Echo, Sierra, Bravo, Alpha, Romeo, Tango. Berisbart@gmail.com. All you need to do is tell us your location and that you've heard the PowerCast and you listen to the PowerCast. We would really like to know just to see what we need to change on the interwebby to make sure that we're reaching the maximum number of people. So, sorry to interrupt, Michael.
No.
Shall I start reading now or have you got more to say?
Thou shalt.
But Christ, did you say verse 4?
I think verse 4. We've already covered that Jesus is better than Moses.
Okay, so for every house, or in this case, organization, is built by someone. But he that built all things is God.
Mm-hmm.
The word man is not in that verse, just for those of you who want to get up me for misquoting it. And Moses, truly faithful or full of faith in his own organization or house, whose house we are. Now, when he says whose house are we, he's talking about Hebrews. This was written by a Hebrew to Hebrews. So he's saying, by Christ as a son over his own house, whose house are we if we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm unto the end? Now, notice that he doesn't say if we hold fast the belief, but if we hold fast the rejoicing of the hope and the confidence in the hope firm unto the end. So if you lose your hope, you know, they say you can be helpless and you can be hopeless. And either one of those is fixable by fixing the other. But if you're helpless and hopeless, that's where thoughts of suicide then creep in.
And Don, let's also acknowledge what this loss of confidence and loss of hope takes you to by context. The loss of this hope, the loss of this rejoicing, the loss of this confidence does not take you back to sex, drugs, rock and roll. It takes you back to sacrifices, ceremony, observance of feast days. And it does not take you back to being unsaved, unredeemed, or unborn again. The writer of this letter isn't trying to make sure that the writer of this letter is trying to make sure that people are absolutely convinced that Christ is the salvation and the salvation of all, the redemption of the world. And he is trying to extricate those who have drifted back toward Judaism, back out of Judaism. He's not trying to rescue them from sex, drugs, rock and roll. He's trying to, all of the things that he is saying that you will go back to if you lose your confidence and your hope is what Christianity has gone back to.
Mm-mm.
Now, Christianity has now redefined what losing your hope and confidence leads to because they are the ones who have done it.
They led the charge. They were the mascot of the band. They were the cheerleaders.
They've lost their confidence. They've lost their hope. They've lost their rejoicing. And so now what are they doing? They are making sure that others have no more confidence, no more hope, and no more rejoicing than what they do, which there's really nothing to rejoice about if you're being dangled over hell.
Dangled over hell by the toes. Every Sunday night, that was me, at our gospel meeting. Dangled over hell by the toes, shoved down as far as I could so that I could smell the sulfur burning. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So it's, you know, even if this was a reverting that Paul is talking about, and Paul is talking about a reverting back to something, you can't revert back to unredeemed, though. You can revert back to something that is a sure sign of a loss of hope, loss of confidence, and a loss of rejoicing. If there's anything Christians have lost, they've lost rejoicing. They can only rejoice if they've got, you know, a 12-piece band and five worship and praise leaders. And come on now, let's do it now. Get it together for Jesus. Come on, can you clap your hands now? That's the only way they can rejoice.
Because God inhabits the praises of his people.
Oh, dear Lord, yes.
I just thought I had to prove that I...
Yeah, and that, but a good point. But see, that is one of the places where they lose confidence and hope. They don't know that God does not inhabit the praises of his people. God inhabits his people. That is completely an old covenant. Why did God inhabit their praises? Because he couldn't get any closer to them.
But they haven't actually lost all of their confidence and rejoicing and hope. Have you ever been to a Christian funeral? I think that's about the only place where you do hear of any rejoicing or hope.
Oh, man.
And they don't have anything to say. All they are addressing is the living people to try and give them a bit of a backbone, to try and, you know, give them an excuse to go back to church the next week so they don't lose out on their cash. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Better stop me right there.
Let's go on through number seven. Here's where Paul, I'm not going to apologize for using Paul. I'm convinced Paul wrote this by the style of logic.
Wherefore, as the Holy Ghost says, I think that's where in
Psalm 95:7.
Today, if you will hear his voice, don't harden your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness.
So this was an exhortation to the nation of Israel. This is quoting from the scriptures. And then what happened during that time in verse 9. Now, it's interesting. The thing we're going to point out to you is that this verse 9 totally disagrees with James altogether, just to make a point here. But let's read through verse 9, Don.
I want to hear that. Harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years.
Well, that if you stop and think about what James said, James says that God cannot be tempted, and neither tempteth he any man. God can't be proved. The writer of Hebrews is totally, and it's not just the writer of Hebrews, it's the scriptures that disagree with James. James made a statement that said that God cannot be tempted, and the scriptures said that God was tempted, that he was tempted by man.
Well, I mean, he did it not once, but, I mean, James the jerk, Genesis 22:1 says this, and God tempted Abraham.
Yeah, I know.
And I know what you've been told. Oh, this was a different word. It's tested. No, that's BS.
Yeah.
That is sanctified BS. Go figure that one out. And because the very same word used in Genesis 22:1 in the Septuagint, that is what Jewish scholars translated into fluent Greek, is exactly the same Greek word as James uses when he said that God doesn't tempt. See, James was a jerk. He was an illiterate little boy from the country. He didn't have a lot going for him, except he did have this genealogy, which allowed him into the temple. But as far as what he's got to say, good Lord Almighty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, buddy.
And then this goes on into verse 10, God having to say a couple of things.
Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in heart. The word there is not there in the original. They do always err in heart. Well, God, why are you grieved? You made them.
You made them to err in heart.
Yeah. How bad? I mean, really? And you want to? They have not known my ways.
By design, we have to. I think it's important what you've taken us to here.
Hang on, I want to say this. Who the hell's fault is that, God? Now you can talk.
And we do know from the extensive teaching that we have from Paul on this is that these things were built into man. As Paul declared very clearly that when God created man, he created him subject to vanity, subject to corruption. And so what does that do? That's not what this teaching is about. But you see, as you gather information about truth of the scriptures, you can let all of that truth shine a brighter light, a different hue upon what you are studying or on what you're reading. So as we're going through this, simply what we want to do is not throw all of the fault toward these guys, but the fact that God designed it this way. I think that's going to serve us very well, actually, Don. Thank you for bringing that up, because I think that holding that perspective in place as we go forward really is going to help us understand this actually a little bit better. And then verse 11.
Now, I want to link this verse back to the previous verse again. Therefore, I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in heart. And they have not known my ways. And I said, well, whose fault is that, God? But listen how God goes in. So I swear in my wrath, the word for wrath is orge, or in fact passion. I swore in my passion, they shall not enter into my rest. So now you're going to punish them for something that you, for some built-in obsolescence or built-in characteristic that
it's
you
because
created,
he wanted it
God.
That
I
way.
I don't get it, God. Tell me, Michael. Michael, you're the nearest thing I know to God. Tell me.
Well, I think he's passionate about getting these people to the place to where that redemption or the fullness of creation could come around.
You mean God got impatient with the long wait for the culmination of creation?
Well, I'm not sure it's impatient, but I think he certainly got passionate about it.
Wow.
I think he was passionate about it when he did it. I think he was passionate about it all the way through. I think he's passionate about it now that it's done.
Wow.
That one, I think we can hang our hat on that. Now, it's very interesting that we have totally disqualified the nation of Israel because of unbelief, right? So we have completely disqualified them and will continue to completely disqualify them. Okay, the problem is unbelief, folks. The problem is unbelief. The problem is unbelief. And now that we've established that the problem is unbelief, let's deal with yours. Let's see how well you're measuring up on the unbelief column. If God swore in his wrath, if God said that they completely failed, if God said they've never known his ways, and the problem was unbelief, now let's see where you stand. Verse 12.
Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart. The word in Greek is poneros, which means actually, it doesn't mean evil. Poneros means a hurtful, if you want, or a diseased or something like that. But poneros is probably closer to diseased. If any of you have an evil heart of unbelief in removing from the living God.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this is really, really wonderful here. Now, what is an evil heart, according to verse 12?
I think it's mixed swimming or wearing lipstick. I think that's...
Now, an evil heart is unbelief. Now, so the issue here is a heart problem. Now, is the heart problem repaired by man's choices and decisions? By the terms of the same scriptures which this writer is quoting, God said that, speaking of the cross, he said, I will take out of you your heart of stone, your evil heart, your unbelief heart, and place in you a heart of flesh. So their evil heart, the evil heart is a heart of unbelief in this description here. So the writer here of Hebrews is making sure that we don't minimize the issue of belief or unbelief. Let's make sure we maintain the importance of belief and unbelief. Don't let it get watered down. Well, I believe today, I had a little doubt this morning when I got up and I had that pain in my back and when mama died and, you know, well, I'm just not real sure. And then I got believed again when I got into that magnificent praise and worship service. And then my belief was all restored. And then something good happened and my belief came back. Something bad happened and I'm just not sure anymore about God. How could a good God, blah, 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 blah. So the issue of unbelief is serious, and it's more serious, and it's more clearly defined as an absolute. You either absolutely, belief is either the key or it's not the key. Now, let's go through just a little bit of what they saw, and they still had unbelief, Don.
Uh-huh.
What did they experience? They watched the Red Sea part. And they walked to the other side on dry land. What did they have on the other side? Unbelief. They, Moses said, contrary to what God said, speak to the rock. Moses smote the rock and water came pouring out of a rock. What did they have after they drank that water? Unbelief. They needed food. God rained down food from a source that it does not come from on this planet. He rained it down from above. They ate it. By the end of the day, what they ate was spoiled, and brand new manna came down the next day. What did they have after they finished eating their manna? Unbelief. They escaped the sword of the largest, most threatening nation that had had them in bondage for generations and generations. And according to the promise of God himself, he brought them out of that bondage. What did they have in them when they came out of bondage? Unbelief. Now, we could go on and on and on, but I think that you get the gist of this story. These people had unbelief. How many of you have watched the Red Sea open? How many of you watched a creek stop flowing the way it's supposed to flow? You have not seen any of these things. You've never seen water come out of a dry well, much less out of a rock. We try to infer that if we were to see miracles, we would be believers. But you see, that's just how important belief is. Belief cannot be produced by experience that a human has or does not have. And as this writer, I think, has convinced us of, as we preach in the Gospel Revolution, faith is a God quality, not a man quality. It's just not there. But does it require faith? Absolutely.
There's another experience. You may say in the wilderness that happened, and that is in Joshua 3, verse 16. God tells them to send the ark over the river with priests on their shoulders. They did that. And here is something, just a little gem. That verse reads, the waters that came down from above stood, rose up upon a heap very far from the city called Adam. That is beside Zaratan. And do you know what? When this came to me, and let me finish the verse, that came down towards the sea from the plain, the salt sea failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. Now, you never hear this story. Why? How surprising is that? I had to be taught this verse, and that is exactly what happened when Jesus Christ died. And everything was rolled back to the city of Adam. Those of you with ears to hear, hear. And they saw this, and what did they have after they saw this?
Unbelief.
Wow.
You know, and Christianity has taught the world that you are supposed to believe something that took place 2,000 years ago, that you have absolutely no connection with except on an emotional level that is ginned up at the Baptist, the Methodist, the Presbyterian, the Catholic, through some form. Now, the Catholics use ceremony to appeal. And, you know, once you go through a lot of these ceremonies, doing this and doing that, pouring this, being poured upon, being, you know, taking this step to the right, this to the left, and, you know, do this, do that. And suddenly this ceremony gets you all involved emotionally. You are attached to a ceremony. That's not an attachment to the cross, folks. Just because there's a cross hanging up there with a golden body hanging on it or a wooden, whichever one it is, does not attach you to the work of the cross. The truth of the gospel is what attaches you to the cross. The Baptists use emotion. Oh, my gosh, do they? And Jesus was hanging there on that old cross. He just was bleeding, and he was. And if you can't trust Jesus after he's done all this, and what do you? Oh, and then you go crying up front, and supposedly, then you're supposed to have changed completely after that experience. The problem is, you realize you hadn't, folks. That's not belief. These things that Christianity produces in people, it's not belief. It is an attachment to a religion. It has nothing to do with belief. It has nothing to do with faith.
It's a fondness for form and tradition.
There
it's a fondness
go.
For, and what happens is if you have a touch from the Lord, to get a touch from the Lord is so good. If you get a touch from the Lord, in any hour and a half session where the floor show got you feeling really happy and then really worshipful, and then the preacher got you feeling really responsible to repent, guess what? You're going to believe that you met God in that situation.
Yeah.
And that becomes that becomes really a millstone around your neck.
It really does, because you're attached to something other than faith. You see, to be attached to faith, you have to be attached to Christ. To be attached to Christ is to be attached to the gospel. To be attached to the gospel is to understand your faith and your belief had nothing to do with this at all. Zero. Don, let's keep reading, unless you've got something else to say about these.
Verse 12 of Hebrews chapter 3. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. How can you depart from the living God, Michael? Mm-hmm.
Well, according to what he's saying, by going back to laws, rules, and regulations. And by going back under laws, rules, and regulations is where you lose your confidence and your hope and your rejoicing. See, we have to keep this in this has been Christianized, this reading. This has been baptized. This has been Catholicized. It has been all of these many others. But we have to read this in context, folks. Going back to what? Losing what? What are you losing? What is it that you are being taken back to? The context of this has nothing to do with sex, drugs, rock and roll. Absolutely nothing. This is an appeal to Hebrews by a Hebrew that has come to understand that it's Christ and Christ alone, and that to go back under Jewish customs and rules and laws is a loss of confidence. It is a loss of rejoicing. It is a loss of hope.
And it is a loss of the confidence and hope and rejoicing, a la verse 6, in the apostle and high priest of our profession, Christ Jesus.
Good Lord, yeah. Gosh, that's a mouthful, Don. Whoa. What has Christianity done to us? Why are we so adamant? Because Christianity has caused the entire planet to lose its confidence, its hope, and it's rejoicing in our apostle and high priest, Christ Jesus. And what have we switched to? We've switched to our own profession. We don't let Christ be the high priest of our confession. We are now the high priest of our own confession and of our own salvation and of our own redemption. I think it's worthy to go back to the very last verse of chapter 2 also. For in that he himself hath suffered being tempted, he's able to help them that are tempted. Tempted with what? What was Jesus tempted with? Jesus was tempted with works to prove his identity. I'm telling you, man, I'm telling you, context, context, context. You can never go back another verse and harm yourself. You can never go read forward and harm yourself. Always make sure the verse you're reading is subject to the verses before and the verses after. Don't be so foolish as to be verse damned.
Michael, when the Protestants gave Roman Catholicism a bit of a knee to the groin, the Roman Catholic Church had to respond with something. So what they responded with was the Council of Trent. It lasted for a few years, and in the late 1550s, the Roman Catholic Church instituted and formalized a dogma which said that the Roman Catholic priesthood was a logical and natural successor to the Levitical priesthood, and that the consent of the public was not required or necessary. Now, you got to love it. I mean, let's just say this out there and then cover our butts as well. Now, in that were a multiplicity of different doctrines that were encapsulated in this Council of Trent, and Protestantism took them over holus bolus. Mm-hmm. Didn't bother to ask if it was true or false. They had no option because outside of the Roman Catholic Church, the bastard Protestant Reformation had no history. Mm-hmm. They had no history. So they had to accept the history they were told was true. Didn't matter that Roman Catholicism had, they were the victors and they wrote the history. And they wrote whatever they wanted to. And when Protestantism came together with all of its traditions, and you notice now that they're all split every which way, Baptists, as you said earlier, and Pentecostals another way, all they had to take with them was the truth that they'd been told by Roman Catholicism.
Yeah.
Now, what you said earlier simply bore that out. The fact of the matter is very simple, and that is that when you lose your hope and the rejoicing of your hope in the apostle and high priest of your calling, Christ Jesus, when you've lost that, you've lost it all. It doesn't matter what brass plaque you hang over the door. It doesn't matter what list of do this and don't do that you enforce on your people. It doesn't matter because you have lost the hope and the rejoicing and the confidence that you just spoke about. What was that verse in chapter 2 again you mentioned?
In the very last part of chapter 2, for in that he himself hath suffered being tempted, he is able to help them that are tempted. And here, again, by going back and back, we are helping context to help us understand tempted with what? Going from what back to what? What was Christ tempted with? Now, and this is where everybody just gets this so screwed up. He was not tempted like every whore. He wasn't tempted like every thief. He wasn't tempted like, every criminal on earth. He didn't suffer the temptation of illicit sexual activity. Jesus suffered the temptation of proving his identity by his works. That's all we have record of, folks. And if you're going to take it past that, you're going to take it beyond that which is identifiable by record. We do know the temptation of Christ. And the temptation of Christ was not Mary Magdalene. Sorry.
Can you quote me one denomination, sect, or schism in Christianity that is not in favor of celebrating your godliness by your works?
Can't find one. So they've all fallen to temptation. And they're trying to fight a temptation that Jesus never suffered.
Oh, boy.
So you talk about really messed up. So here, by backing up just to here. Now, see, what I want to do is keep backing up. Now that we've read through this, my temptation is to keep going back verse by verse by verse, because it is going to help us understand the previous verses much better. But we'll cover all that territory in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, coming up 2 months from now.
Be there or be somewhere else.
Gospel Revolution.
Okay, let's go back to Hebrews. Verse 13 of Hebrews chapter 3. But, now, presumably this is over in contrast to what's just preceded. Exhort one another daily. Now, what just preceded? What just preceded is that what we have is confidence and hope and a rejoicing. We're happy about the confidence and hope we have. That makes us want to dance. Mm. We got rejoicing. But, he says, over against that, exhort one another daily. What does that mean? It means the CPR of the gospel. Think about this. Mm-hmm. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of missing the mark.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is packed full.
Now, who is the mark? The apostle and high priest of your calling.
Mm-hmm.
What can you be hardened against? The rejoicing of hope and your happiness, and you're wanting to dance daily because you've got this confidence now that you never had before. All you had before was failure through the law, and now you got all this good stuff, and you don't want to miss that, Mark.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to miss today. Now, we've got to find out, you know, the writer of Hebrews has been very coy in his definition as to what today he is talking about. But he doesn't remain coy about it, and we will find out as we go on. We're not going to reveal this to you yet. You've got a Bible. Read.
Can I just go for another verse here?
After I make this comment.
Oh, you are so pushy.
Lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. What now is deceitful about sin? The thing that is deceitful about sin on this side of the cross is that it exists.
Can I talk yet?
No.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
Verse 14. You see that, family? Mike makes a big deal. I've always got to read another verse, but he doesn't like it when I do it. Honestly, have you ever seen such rubbish? But exhort one another daily. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it's called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ. If we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast until the end.
Until the end of what? What end were they talking about?
Weekend. Was it the weekend?
You see, the scriptural context of this is he's trying to bring them up to the cross. We've got to have this confidence in this today. He's not revealed to us what the today is today yet in this progression, but he's saying that you need to hang on to this confidence unto the end, not to the end of your life, not to the end of the world. We've already completely annihilated that false doctrine and the deceitfulness of that sin. But he is talking about holding fast unto the end. Now, what is the word end? Let's look at two words. Number one is partakers. Let's look at that one.
Let me go to the Greek. And what verse is this about? 12?
That's verse 14.
Ah, 14. My word, we're rushing through this chapter. With havers, that's partakers, with havers, for we have become of the anointed, never even the original of the understanding unto finish confirmed we should be down having. Okay. For we have become partners of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? In a business, a partner gets the same income as the other partner.
Mm-hmm.
That is, if we should be retaining the beginning of the assumption confirmed unto the consummation. Now, what word was it? Partakers?
Yeah, partakers, and then the word end.
Okay. The word end is telos, which means finish or consummation.
Mm.
And the word partakers in Greek is with havers or partners.
Now, the word telos, where else does that show up? I think that shows up as the word, is it perfect? Telos?
That's telios. And let's have a quick look. 5056 is the Strong's number. Go away, you rabbit. It the word telos is similar to the word teleos. It certainly comes from part of the same root, and teleos was the word that meant complete, that you latched onto. Good call too. And telos is it's very interesting. Strong's says it's the point aimed at as a limit. In other words, if you're on a ship on the ocean and you're bound for New York Harbor, well, New York Harbor would be, I mean, it's the end of...
So a completed journey.
A trip, I guess.
Steadfast unto the completed journey, maybe. Well, you know, speaking in the scriptural text of this Perfect. Story... This journey was completed at the cross.
Uh-huh.
That's what we've been learning about.
Now, if this trip was not completed at the cross, then what's the point of having any rejoicing, hope, or confidence in the apostle of our calling?
And then, of course, we're still being he's still dangling this today in front of us. So don't lose the confidence that you are a partner with Christ.
Love it.
Don't lose that confidence. So we're talking about a loss of confidence all the way through this. And what have we learned is a loss of confidence. If you do not survive the temptation that Christ himself survived, you'll lose your confidence. If you fail at the temptation of trying to prove that you are redeemed by your works, or that you are a son of God or a partaker with Christ, if you lose that, then you are you're going to lose your confidence. If you do not understand that you are partakers with Christ, you will lose your confidence. If you trust in anything else, your own faith, your baptism, your obedience, whatever it may be that you might trust in, the liturgy at your services, traditions that you go through, if you hold fast to any of those, if you put any confidence in those as being something that pertains to your partnership with Christ, you will lose confidence in Christ. That even makes sense. If you are married to someone and you start flirting with somebody else, you're going to lose confidence in your relationship with the one you're married to. If you start having dinner with somebody else, if you start doing, if you become intimate with somebody else, you'll lose all confidence of the relationship that you're in. That's what Paul's saying. Stop flirting with the law. Stop flirting with all of these rules and regulations. Stop flirting with this temptation to go back to Judaism.
Let me put that in as simple a manner as I can. And we're going to use Roman Catholicism as an example. Now, When I use this example, don't think that Baptists, Pentecostals, Fundamental Evangelicals, Methodists, Presbyterians, or any of the others are any different. Just remember that we all have our own ways of justifying ourselves before God. Now, in the Roman Catholic faith, if you're going to be shriven or purified or holified again, you need to go to confession. So you did something else, you murdered somebody, or at least you murdered them in your mind. And you go in there and you say to the priest, I did this. And he says, well, do three Hail Marys and a couple of, I don't know what they do. So you leave there, do your three Hail Marys, and you feel much better. And the reason you feel better is because the priest has told you God feels a lot nicer about you now.
Yeah.
Now, that is a form of self-righteousness which is complete throughout Christianity. I don't give a damn what the sect, schism, or denomination is. It is right through Christianity.
Mm-hmm. And you've lost your confidence in today. We still got to find out what today is.
Well, if you keep talking, we're never going to get there.
Well, Brother Mike, it means today. It means right now. Well, no, it doesn't mean right now. Because this was spoken by the prophets about a today that was coming. Now, this is thrilling. You're gonna have a good time finding out what today is.
So this was written 500 years before Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Minimum.
Okay. For we are made partakers or partners of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end.
Mm, so good.
While it is said today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation.
All right, so don't let happen to you what happened to the nation of Israel. And how can you stop happening to you what happened to the nation of Israel? If it is unbelief, once again, if the nation of Israel failed this test of belief, if they failed it with all the manifestations they saw, how are you going to pass the test of belief? Hopefully, this belief thing is going to fall on somebody else's shoulders other than yours, because surely if it falls on yours, as surely as it did Israel, you will fail and have failed just as miserably as the nation of Israel did. Let's see what else we've got in this chapter.
Chapter 3 of Hebrews, verse 16. For some, when they had heard, did provoke. Howbeit, not all that came out of Egypt by Moses.
And I don't even know what that means.
Let's just divest this of the punctuation. For some, when they heard, did provoke, but not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. So some provoked and some didn't provoke, I think is what this verse is saying.
Oh, you know, that's always been a mystery to me, because I'm trying to figure out who came out of Egypt, but not by Moses. But what the statement is saying is that some did provoke, but not all of them.
Yes, I believe so.
Some provoked and some didn't.
Yeah. Let me read it through from the Greek.
Now, this is interesting. So he was provoked by them. He was provoked by the whole nation, even though some of them provoked and some didn't provoke, but he was angry with the whole nation. So then he goes on. He says, so some provoked, some didn't that came out of Egypt. So, you know, part of the church was doing bad, but the rest of the church wasn't. But who was God grieved with? The whole group. You see this, and it takes me back to the sun kleo. God was always making sure that any divisions you see in identifying belief and unbelief or obedience or disobedience, that God grouped everybody together. He saw all of these as one, not as individuals. That's why he dealt with them in the way he did with the high priest, even of the old covenant. And so he was grieved with those who provoked, but howbeit not all of them that came out of Egypt did this. But what does it say in verse 13 or verse 17?
But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness?
And what was their sin? We've identified that in this, in these first three chapters. And we're going to have to remember that. That was back in chapter 2 that he made very clear that the sin was unbelief.
Let me read the,
where do we,
let me read verse 18. And I'll reread 17. But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom, as far as I know, not one person ever went into the promised land. But anyway, that's another thing. But to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? Now,
this is the second time we've had affirmed what sin is. Be not hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. The context of that, the verse before it says evil heart of unbelief. The evil heart, unbelief is sin. Sin is unbelief. Unbelief is sin. That has been affirmed now three times in the book of Hebrews.
And here's the last verse of chapter 3. So we see that they could not enter in because of
unbelief or sin, and the sin of unbelief. So the writer has just gone to extreme lengths to identify what sin is to God. Sin is to God unbelief. That faith is the only remedy for this sin. And that so far, all kinds of miracles will not produce belief.
Yep.
And if this is up to your faith, then we're going to have to deal with your unbelief. Because, you know, they all tempted God. Not all of them tempted God, but God was grieved with all of them. And so if we're going to divide this down into believers and unbelievers in your church, you've got to understand God's going to deal with all of you as unbelievers. If we're going to deal with this as sin in your church, some sinners and some not, God's going to deal with you all as sinners. And you're going to find out in the chapter and chapters to come, that was a very merciful thing that God did for us, that he concluded all in unbelief. Man, I tell you what a wonderful place to put my favorite verse in the Bible, in Romans, Romans 10:32, that God declared them all in unbelief. What we just described to you is exactly what the teacher in Romans led us to understand completely about the nation of Israel, that he declared all in unbelief, that he might have mercy upon all. And not just the nation of Israel, but to all of mankind, as it's explained in detail in the book of Romans.
So how would you sum up this chapter, Mike?
Well, right now we've got everybody corralled as an unbeliever. We have concluded that the nation of Israel failed at keeping the law and at faith. Now, the prophet has told us a today was coming that would remedy all of this. And the writer still has not been forthcoming with this term today. It still is showing up all the way into the middle of the next chapter. So you're going to have to stick with us next week to find out. It's kind of sounds weird, but you got to find out what today is.
And the next chapter starts with the word therefore, I think, if I'm
Right. And let us therefore.
Therefore. Okay. And this chapter started with the word.
Therefore. Wherefore. Chapter 3 was a wherefore. Chapter 2 was chapter 2's a therefore. Chapter 3's a wherefore. And chapter 4's a wherefore. And chapter 6 is a therefore. And
hey, hold up.
It just keeps going.
Runaway horse. So what I guess what I'm saying is there is a very long argument being made here. If you read,
therefore,
yeah,
we have to keep going back.
We do. Wherefore I am.
We will.
Getting, yeah. Okay. All right. I think we've got.
Don, this has been wonderful. Folks,
is it time for me to talk about my weekend yet?
No. We don't want to know about your change of habit. But your weekend, we would love to know about.
That was a nice movie by Elvis Presley, Change of Habit.
Yeah, it was indeed.
So did I just cut you off? Because if I did and it succeeded, I found a way to deal with you now. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything more about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to the boss about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com. Hit any link you like, preferably the donate link. But it's good night from myself, Don Bartle, from the GR Studios right here in Gospel City, USA.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in the Manhattan Project, right here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the city that the world did not know existed for several years. We are really glad to be bringing these shows to you. Goodness, if anyone is getting it even half out of this as to what I am, you are enjoying the heck out of these shows. You may indeed
send us money.
You may indeed want to go back and start and listen to this series over again up to this point. And listen to what you've heard, because I'll guarantee you, if we went back and started this book over again, we would have a completely different hue on this, more enlightenment, more understanding, simply because we've held ourselves as steadfastly as I know how to context, and we've held ourselves very strongly to what the Greek actually says. That has brought forth a treasure trove out of Hebrews. And we love you guys, and goodness, have fun with us.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week, only...
I'm depending on better.
You're depending? Mm-hmm. So you want to talk about my weekend?
No, it does not all depend. I am depending. That we are not going to talk about your weekend.
I got the perfect song to finish today's show off.
Uh-oh.
So now I'm going to go and have a beer.
In heaven there is no beer. That's why we drink it here. And when we're gone from here, all our friends will be drinking all our beer. La 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 la.
In heaven there is no beer. That's why we drink it here. And when we're gone from here, all our friends will be drinking all our beer. La 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 la. La 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 la.